Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, an occasionally amusing and rarely funny and semi-regular series. I 15 episodes, I still need the form, and I can't read it correctly, and I've had a third of a beer. Okay, so let's try that again. Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Bah Humbug, and it's about an annual series of readings about the stresses and trials and tribulations of working through the holidays. And our guests for this podcast are Well, introduce yourselves, I guess. I screwed it up already, and I'm not editing that screw up out. There's going to be two stars.
You
this
should.
Is going to happen.
Hey,
it's going to be organic. It's going to be real. Maybe people can handle this degree of realism. But yeah, maybe introduce yourselves to Jason and Stephanie. Maybe that would be...
All right, so hi, I'm Stephanie Bria. I'm a poet and an events organizer and have worked a lot of jobs over the holiday season.
And I'm Jason Baldinger, a local poet, a man about town, record store employee, drunk. Yeah, all those things.
Soon to be on Sub Pop Records.
Yes, soon to be on Sub Pop Records, at least for 33 seconds. And we, by working through the holidays, we're actually literally meaning work at the holidays. The shit jobs that you do. And the ways that you're dehumanized and how difficult that is. Just to clarify, you know, because you didn't say literally.
Literally, yes.
Because working through, I mean, we're all working through the holidays, man. We're all trying to just get through.
That we are. That we are.
Please help.
Please help. Please help. As he takes a swig of beer. But yeah, so this reading series, so actually, let's get it out of the way, though. We're going to say it a bunch of times. So it is the year 2017.
It is.
And the reading is going to happen Sunday, December 17th at
Brillo Box
at
8 p.m.
8 p.m. And that is on Penn Avenue?
Penn Avenue.
By Children's Hospital. There you go. And all proceeds will go to?
The Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank.
Yes. And admission is?
Well, give us $100 if you want to give it to the
food bank. Yes, it's for the food bank.
$5, $100, whatever you want to give us.
Yeah, jerks.
$5
for the food bank.
Suggested donation. But
$5.
We will take more.
You'll take more. Fantastic. And there's a lineup of poets, right? And
yes.
There's something kind of unique about this reading, I think, is the stocking going to be back this year?
Yes.
Yes.
I will have to unpack it from my basement.
Oh.
But yes, because that
you have
is
a week.
My
no,
own
you don't have a week.
Personal Christmas stocking that gets used every year. So, yep.
And so what the readers do, I won't ask what the prompt is this year, but we do an index card. We write a little bio based on a question, right?
Correct.
It gets shoved in the stocking, and that's how the order's decided.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So you have to be willing to go along with the flow for this event.
Ready to read at any moment.
Be ready to read at any moment, so you have to be really careful about when you time your bathroom breaks, your beer runs, all of those things.
Yes.
Your friends can't just come and then leave. If you go on last, they're going to have to stay the whole time.
Yes.
We kind of... the prompts in the past have... I guess we should say that I don't believe in traditional bios. I think that they're a little pompous and nobody really cares about them anyways. So that was sort of how we started the funny, humorous, spur-of-the-moment ones where, you know, I hand you an index card 5 minutes before things start and you fill out, you know, what you want your bio to say. I think it helps people take themselves less seriously and to kind of get into the holiday spirit a little bit better. So, and we learn a lot about each other as... that we wouldn't have known otherwise. So
our writers this year, which is pretty much a fluid lineup. We have the same general group of people, but a few people flex in and out. This year will be Becky Corrigan, Angel Ellis, Rich Gedgick, who was on the show a while back with you, Stephanie, Lori Jaquila, Andrea Lorion, Disha Filia, who will hopefully tell us a really good story about working at Tom McCann's Shoes. And she'll be changing it from Easter to Christmas. Because we were like, that story, we'll just make it work. Megan Tutelo, Matt Usia, who is you.
Yeah, that's me, yeah.
Bob Wallicky.
Wallicky. Gotta say it the right way.
Bob Wallicky. I'm gonna keep this up because I will forget that list of names. As well as Stephanie and I will probably be reading poems and hosting. So each writer gets about 5 minutes, up to 7 minutes, to read a short story or a few poems or whatever about their experiences, real or fictitious, exaggerated perhaps, maybe straight up truthful, of working during the holiday season. Generally it's retail, but there are so many other demons in that regard, as you tend to write about college professorhood.
Yeah, which is kind of a weird thing, because this week's finals week. It's the end of finals week. I bet they'll still have some colleagues by the reading Sunday night that will not have filed their grades or not filed their grades somewhere. Those people, Saturday finals, 72 hours. But for me, it's like, you know, even though I'm not technically working at the holidays or the holiday is finals week, this is the great time for, like, the reckoning, you know, because I know that when I was putting my grades together this semester, it was sort of like, well, here it is. Whatever happened with these students happened.
Yes.
And I think that was what was supposed to happen. And if something else was supposed to happen, well...
you're shit out of luck.
You're shit out of luck, or maybe your next professor will fix you.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just sort of that. So it's also about labor. I know I hopped on, because of my involvement in adjunct unionization drives.
Yes.
And all of that. And that's still happening, by the way.
That was the first, or that was one of the ways in which we met.
Yes.
Years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
So, was discussing that.
Yes.
As I recall. This is our fourth year doing this.
Fourth, yeah.
And amusingly, the first year we did this at Ham Bones, my house tried to catch on fire.
Oh,
right?
No.
Before I was supposed to go to the reading. So I had to call her and tell her to stall while I tried not to have my house catch on fire.
Oh dear, what happened? What?
I do remember that.
Yeah. I thought it'd be a good time for that story. So I came into the house after doing laundry and noticed immediately that there was a very heavy ozone smell and cloud in my apartment.
Oh.
And so the cat is like walking around the apartment coughing, and I'm walking around the apartment coughing, and I'm like trying to figure out what the hell is happening. And I wandered up into my housemate's room, and I'm like, Jay, did you smell anything? And he's like, I thought I noticed something, but I wasn't sure. So I keep walking around the fucking house trying to figure this out, and I finally, as I walk back into the living room, I catch the plug, one of the plugs on the far wall of the living room, the outside wall, is sparking.
Oh my!
And nothing's, you know, terrible happening, but there's carbon marks up the wall, and
yes,
the plug is melting into itself, and this is the source of the issue. So I had to call the landlord, who fortunately lives 3 blocks away, and, you know, and I had to call Stephanie and be like, Steph, this might be a problem. I don't know if I'm going to make it tonight. You know,
wasn't that? It also snowed that year too.
Yes, it did.
So surprisingly enough, we've continued after that first year. Well, maybe we should have just been like one and done. Yeah, it did. It did snow the first year.
Yeah, it snowed really hard, if I remember correctly, when we were doing it. So, yeah, so that was our illustrious first year. I don't know if I remember that there are any stories from the other three that I can pull, but that one stands out in my head.
Last year I got real drunk and lost half of my story. Do you remember that? At the beginning. So, like, I lost the end of it. Like, I was reading, got to what I thought was, it wasn't the end, and I was like, I don't know where any of the papers are, and then someone found them sitting, like, way in the back of the room, and then finished. You guys don't remember this?
I don't
remember this.
Well, that happened last year. This year, I'm gonna, like, I don't know, shove them in my bra, so no matter how many drinks I have beforehand, like, we're good.
Sense,
I don't
yeah.
know. So, but yeah, I was, like, reading my memoir piece, and then I'm Not at the end, but there are no more pages in my hand. Well, I'm glad no one remembers that, because I was pretty embarrassed. But
well, now it's on the internet forever.
Ever, I know. Well, yeah, that's yeah. Okay.
My cat coughing in an ozone-induced electrical fire, and...
Maybe I just won't drink as much this year. Yeah.
I think... I mean, it's the holidays. I don't know how you get through otherwise, so, you know.
So what we're saying is, folks, come to the Brillo Box on Sunday, and you'll see this very professional operation
yes.
by these people who really have their shit together
so
and are going to put on
so
the best show you're ever going to see.
We are working class poets. Did we not state that earlier?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, working poor poets, because working class doesn't exist anymore. But we promised, I promised we wouldn't get too political.
Because it's the holidays.
Because you're going to have to deal with that at the fucking Christmas dinner at some point in time.
Yeah.
When Uncle Jerry continues to talk about how Trump didn't sexually harass a woman.
See, you just did it again.
I'm sneaking.
I'm sneaking. Hey, Matt.
Yeah?
Do you have a poem?
You know, I do.
I think, you know, since Matt is also part of this... I thought maybe we'd try and do something different. So Matt's going to read a poem, and maybe then we'll follow him with poems after.
Okay, you know, and you know, I just realized how much it sucks when I do that to other people now. Thank you.
You're welcome. there's also that moment that, you know, we've talked about, because I've now done this. This is number 6.
Yeah.
There's no longer hosting roles here, so now I sort of commandeer hosting.
Yeah, there you go.
Here,
okay, so what I'm reading, again, since it's about the crushing end and the what happened didn't happen, I'm reading a piece. Last year I read a piece about people in academia that I know that went insane.
Okay.
And now these are the skeletons in my closet. There's this great book by a man named Tom Fox called Defending Access, where he says, you know, if you teach composition long enough, you have these skeletons in your closet. These students that you just couldn't help or couldn't save or whatever. For whatever reason. Maybe, you know, lack of resources. Maybe your own lack of experience. Maybe just the mountains that they have to climb are just too high. But and so I'm reading something in 6 parts about students that I still think about. So this is part 3, right? I haven't settled the order yet, but this is just it's a taste. It's a taste of what
just
you're going to get.
A little taste.
All right. In my confidential report to campus police and student mental health services, I said, I sincerely doubt he sees other people as human. This is especially the case with African-American women. I also wrote how, in 3 semesters of freshman comp, every single paper of his I saw, whether it be about Plato's cave, or just war theory, or current events, in it he had to mention Yoko Ono's alleged abortions, and the supposed FBI recordings of MLK with a prostitute. This had to be in every single paper. Of course he liked me. Was on my schedule at the Writing Center almost every week for 2 years. Him sitting across the table, tweaking, his eyes staring straight through my skull, panicking every time another student showed up for an appointment. And a few years later, when somebody shot up the lobby of Western Psych, I sat at my laptop, parked on CNN.com, pressing reload again and again, waiting for them to announce the shooter's name. And damn surprised when it wasn't him.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I still Google that guy's name every now and then. So far, nothing. I'm shocked. I'm shocked. But, yeah.
Is it my turn, then?
Yeah, it was your idea to start.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about why we came up with this.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Yeah, there we go.
A break in between.
Yeah. Sure.
Not, like, blow our load all at once.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. This is why I do events with Stephanie, because she's really good at this stuff.
There you go. Like, yeah.
You can't see this because it's a podcast, but I just rolled up my sleeves, so.
You did, man. She's getting deep on this.
So, do you remember why we started this? We aren't going to give the same answer, probably. Let's see.
No, I don't. I seem to remember that when the Stutzterkle Blues came out, that I was trying to do either Labor Day or May Day readings. And perhaps in that process, because we had become friends right around that time as well, it would have been 2013, we talked about how we should do a Christmas show as well. Do I remember correctly, or am I just sort of, like, floating?
You're kind of there, I think. You're, like, mixing some stuff together. I think we decided... So, for me, I always related very much to David Sedaris' Holidays on Ice book.
Oh, that's right.
And
yes,
so
right.
I was like, you want to do this labor thing... I really have all these excellent stories about, you know, working over the holiday season. That's obviously a really memorable time for people who labor, whether it's blue collar or white collar or whatever it is, right? And
we're dirt fucking poor.
Yeah. And like me. But this idea then that we would do this holiday thing, because we kind of had some readers we thought that would fit. And then maybe that would translate into doing the reading in May. Was the holiday one first? That's the part I don't remember.
I think actually the Labor Day.
Oh, that's
September
right. It was correct.
Because
and
Studs came out after May Day, so I couldn't do May Day.
All right.
And we then tried to do this as a May Day thing another year later, and it turned into a fiasco. Yeah.
So we've decided that we've got
again, very
we are
professional.
The city's best and only David Sedaris Holidays on Ice labor work related reading series, so we have no one stepping on our toes, so we just decided to keep going with just the holidays in some way. And you know, I think it's nice for everybody to kind of reflect, even if that's not what you work at now, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of like look back a little bit. It's a good way for us to kind of Rich always talks about this is like, you know, we get to all hang out and see each other one time without having to have a holiday party of,
right,
you know,
it's our
or whatever.
Holiday party. It's the writer family
yeah,
holiday
so
party.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, our way to do that. We didn't always do the money going to charity, but last year...
was the first year we collected.
And we did for the ACLU.
And that was in direct relation to the election.
Correct. Well, we're not talking about politics.
We're not talking about politics.
And, yes.
This year you talked me out of the ACLU.
Correct.
And I like your idea so much better because...
So the idea was that as people over the course of this past year have donated lots of money to lots of national organizations, especially the ACLU, that I personally wanted to have our funds go to something a little bit more closer to home. I wanted there to be a direct correlation between how much money we raise on Sunday and how many, you know, turkeys go to families a week later. We
right,
do this
nice.
Event and it's right at the holiday season. Let's have our money have the most impact. If there's so much food insecurity, even in our city right now at this very moment, that I felt that our funds would have the best impact and sort of the most immediate response, right? So
yes.
what people come and throw in that pot on Sunday, I want to be able to tell them, you know, that translated into 17 turkeys or whatever it is. I don't even know. 16,
yeah.
you know, like how many cases of corn, how many families are fed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's going
yeah.
directly to
correct.
Get somebody food for
Christmas. A week later. Yep.
Yeah.
So that was, I was kind of adamant about that. And luckily you and Rich both were actually kind of into that as an idea.
No,
so
I mean,
doing
the Bridge series and doing a lot of various fundraising events like that over the course of this last year, you're constantly trying to find ways to help locally. You know, national organizations are great and necessary, obviously, but hopefully we can put $300 or $400 in the hands of the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, and that's about what we did last year, I believe, and you know, there will be hopefully a bunch less hungry families at Christmas.
Yeah.
I did not articulate that well, but it was well enough, I suppose. Yeah, so that's how we arrived at this point. Stephanie can be very domineering at various points in times. You might not be
I'm
able
bossy.
To
bossy. You can't tell because this is a podcast, so you can't see me.
Bossy.
Yeah, you can. They can probably hear it in my voice. However,
it's one of the things that we
it's
love.
A good microphone. So yeah.
But
you're
yeah.
too tired to be bossy tonight.
We have an hour, right? So we have plenty of time. Yeah. So I thought that was ideally, we'd also love to be able to pay the participants. My dream goal is that where we get to the point you know, maybe in our 10th season, where, like, everybody who reads gets a bottle of booze, and then we can donate some money. We're not quite there yet, but that's my goal for this series.
To send
every writer home with a bottle of booze. Now, maybe not top shelf, but, like, you know.
Mid-shelf, maybe?
Yeah.
Mid-shelf.
Well,
I would start with Swill,
because then we could give him anything. However, we're not, that's like, future goals for this project.
I would love it. It's a flask bottle of Black Velvet.
Okay. Yeah.
Personally, that would be, I'd all right,
yeah,
that.
So we'll see. Well, you know.
Maybe I'll start a Christmas escrow account, you know, and just throw a little money in it, so we can just get Rebel Yell for everybody.
The Christmas, our parents used to have it when they had good jobs.
Yes,
my mom used to have the Christmas club. Yeah, and you would put money in every paycheck so that you could buy your kids presents at the end of the year.
Yeah, and you didn't notice the $10, and then at the end of the year, you actually could afford gifts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. Or layaway. That was the other.
Layaway. Yeah.
That was how I had Christmas. Thank God for Kmart.
My mom was Christmas club at work. She did that. Yeah. So.
Which I think, you know, not political, but I think. I think we could talk about culture, and I think we need to talk about culture, and I think it's in the background of all of these readings, is that, you know, Christmas, what it's supposed to be, and maybe what it was. And what it is, mm-hmm. this weird collision of commerce. A radical form of humanism and commerce. And I think that is part of the tension in, well, maybe not so much my pieces, but I think everybody else is that you have this moment of giving, but it's also about having. And it's this, the Christmas is this weird, you know,
The
landmine,
of trying to, you know, get people gifts. And I know people are, you know, ask me about that, and it's like, let's not do that. Let's go to dinner and have fun. Let's have an experience. We don't need fucking gifts, you know. I would rather spend time with people, and celebrate our friendship or whatever we consider our various relationships to be. Than to have a thing.
I definitely think that's a trend more so lately. It's become more acceptable to say that out loud and admit it. And I know personally, like, I'm okay with saying that. I know that when I was 15 years younger, I felt that I couldn't do that.
Yes.
Even with my immediate family, that I couldn't not give things to people because they were going to give me something. Mm-hmm. And I was still poor, and I would steal my holiday gifts to give to people. That was one of last year's pieces that you didn't hear. But that it was this idea that I was like, I really want to give my aunt so-and-so something. She won't listen to this, so we don't have to worry about it. But, like, I would have to steal it from my workplace because I didn't have to be big, but I didn't have any extra money if I wanted to pay the electric bill. And so, but now we're at the point where we can move past that, and I think lots of people are, like you said, stepping up and being like, hey, I'm not interested, like, we're adults, and I don't, you know.
I think how ghastly the, you know, Black Friday, and how much it encroaches into Thanksgiving particularly, you know, has turned a lot of people off, and seeing the crowds on the news and the people fighting over whatever the toy is this year, whether, you know, years ago it would have been Tickle Me Elmo or Cabbage Patch Dolls or whatever. I don't know what the big thing will be this year, but there will be something that everyone will be fighting in the aisles for.
I think it's video game stuff now. It's just hard to find stuff that I think that's probably what it is now.
I don't know. Certainly also the tenor of the holidays changed with so much online shopping.
Yeah.
But I can't really weigh in on that because I do work retail, but I work specialty retail, and it's not the same thing. I don't get affected by Christmas quite the same way that I did years ago when I worked in office stores, office supply stores, or Walmart, or whatever.
Man, yeah.
That was a bad time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I mean, now the bad time is actually I have a colleague whose husband works for UPS, and this is a toxic time of year in their family because of
everybody's pushing, you know, way too hard to do something when, again,
online
a thing isn't
shopping.
Yeah.
UPS.
You know, and I think that's the thing. I mean, you just switch to this thing that seems, you know, there's no trample videos on Amazon, but I mean, you don't hear about unless, you know, you really dig about what, you know, the people who actually go and pull those things off the shelves, what their lives are like, you know. I know when I was doing some organizing, I mean, there's a warehouse, I think it was in North Carolina, that's not air conditioned, and they made the decision to just have an ambulance. It was just easier to have an ambulance service there. Then just to have them on standby for when people passed out and stuff, as opposed to calling and the liability with that. And it's definitely cheaper than air conditioning the warehouse. I think there was some kind of weird deal, of course, that was struck that somehow the people were actually making less than minimum wage to do
the work. That wouldn't surprise me somehow.
My sister works in South Carolina and somehow has a job that pays her less than minimum wage. Because the South.
They will rise again.
They will rise again. Not this week, though.
No. But I won't make the joke.
I did. People get it, they get it. If not, they don't. But yeah, I mean, I think, but that's the tension. And also, I think the other thing about the holidays for me is this thing that I had to deal with in order for me to have some kind of fun or just get through this period in time when, like, all the things that I like are closed and, you know, all the websites I like to read aren't updated and all the annoying stuff is, like, forced merriment. Coming to terms with forced merriment. And this time of year about forced merriment.
We're going to have so much fun, you're going to be whistling zippity-doo-dah at your assholes.
And how, I mean, that is just like the perfect formula for despair, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just crucial, you know, you must be happy.
I didn't smile enough at dinner.
Yes.
I know that it crushed you. I apologize. But, you know, I can't smile all the time.
How did that happen?
Uh-oh.
Maybe someone's calling in.
Maybe they're not calling in.
It was a one-ring and done.
I thought I unplugged the phone. We usually do in the office. I unplug the phones and they don't ring. I didn't know those phones made noise. I forgot because it's anyone.
Well, this is professionalism.
This is live.
Doing it live! No.
That's what happens.
It happens. My mom already called tonight, so it's probably not her. But anyway. But yeah, I mean, forced merriment, which is also, I mean, just a thing that is so disruptive about this time of year, and it just messes people. And I think that's something that I, at least in the you know, I've been to three of the four, or two of the three that already existed, and I will be at three of the four. It seems like that's a major tension in a lot of the readings and a lot of the pieces, is this also, but we're supposed to be happy. Even if we're really stressed, even if we're not, maybe we're just not normally happy people, you know.
Right. And I mean, I could definitely relate, especially in my Walmart days, early 20s, late teens, where, you know, you have to deal with all this bullshit of working at the holidays, and then you still have to try and smile when you're at home. You're exhausted, and you've been shat upon every day since Thanksgiving, and, you know, it's December, so the seasonal depression is starting to kick in, or the very real long-term depression, whichever it might be. It becomes hard to put on a happy face for this time period.
I think for me it's more expectations. Mm-hmm. So, versus what actually happens or can possibly happen. So, a lot of times when you're working these jobs, you know, you work more now. You get off less. Same with, like, UPS drivers or whatever it is. Like,
you're 3 12-hour days.
You know, I'm working the 2 hours directly before the reading on Sunday. But the point being is that for me personally, I love the holidays. I enjoy all of the aspects of it. I like the tree and the caroling and all of the things. But the idea then that I don't have enough time to commit to all of these other things, and so I'm missing this cookie decorating thing, or I can't do this other thing, and I can't do that, and then all of a sudden it's January and I realize that I didn't do any of the things that maybe you would think you're supposed to do at the holidays.
Yeah.
But I also truly enjoy some of them, at least. So mm-hmm. I'm feeling sad because, sure, it's expectations, and sure, it's, you know, unrealistic, and it doesn't make a difference or whatever it is. And but also, some of them I genuinely enjoy and don't get the opportunity to do so. And I think that that, for me, is where a lot of the frustration and probably anger in some ways come from. Mm. I get a little angry.
You get a little pissy about the holidays?
Yeah.
That's fair.
And then, like, that flows over into, you know, family relationships. You know, I want things to be perfect for my mom to come over, even though they're never perfect enough for her. So then it turns... Same thing. Expectations is a really... Yeah. That's, like, a really big thing in my life. And like
expectations kind of ruin everything,
though.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've...
I'm dialing them back or getting rid of them as much as possible.
Yeah, if you know, a family member who once actually locked herself in the bathroom. She won't listen. Locked herself in the bathroom. I could tell the story. Locked herself in the bathroom and sobbed hysterically because her mother got her Tefal instead of Farberware.
Oof.
Pots for Christmas. Yeah. And it was just... And, you know, when she told me the story, as if this was the most rational thing that could that a human being could experience, you know, of you know, a few moments of hysterical crying in a bathroom over Tefal. But, and it was, well, everything else was perfect. Everything else was perfect. Everything we fumbled perfect. The ball at the one and kicked it through the back of the end zone or something. You know, that was it, and it was over. It was the perfect season. It was the, and it was just all of humanity suffered because of Tefal.
Tefal.
Yeah, I don't think I have any Tefal
dishes. I think actually we ended up inheriting.
She
ended up buying her own Farberware, and then we were like, we were poor, and
you were like, we'll take those.
Yeah, we'll take the pots, and I cooked some macaroni and cheese in one of them tonight. So
nice.
It's the true holiday spirit right there. The gift that kept on giving, or something, right?
Mm, you gave me some Kraft macaroni and cheese, yeah.
Cheese and macaroni.
True.
Gotta get the commercial right, dude.
Gotta get the commercial.
If you want endorsement deals,
you're right. See, this is why this podcast isn't going anywhere. Or at least we try to refuse to monetize it, but you know.
I think it would be great to have a podcast called "We're All Gonna Die" and other fun facts brought to you by Kraft Macaroni and Cheese.
That would be nice, actually. I will say that would be. I would wholeheartedly endorse that product.
You might actually be able to get through the introduction more than once.
Yes, perhaps. Until the you know, cancer from the artificial orange dye that they just took out last year finally gets me, because I had already had 30-some-plus-odd years of artificial orange dye and in my bloodstream by a weekly serving that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Things to look forward to.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Speaking of things to look forward to, actually, can we transition? Can we do a rough transition to another piece, another
sure.
poem? Yeah. As we talk read, about, we've talked read. About these tensions. Can we show the people?
Oh, I don't know if
as much as
it,
you can show people in a podcast about these tensions over or these collisions. So
this is more of a glancing blow at Christmas.
Yeah,
it's called A Feast for Drunks to Devour, and this may be popping up in the Post Gazette this week or next week.
Oh my!
It's definitely being published in the Post Gazette soon. So I just don't know when. The Ronettes play overhead. Be my baby. The tambourine crash, then castanets. I cross the altar that's now tanks of beer. This used to be a sanctuary, but aren't all bars sanctuaries? We've been drinking our memories. A friend mentioned he never thought that time would be remembered as the best times of our life. And I have little patience for that narrative, which is to say, I understand. We carve lines from memories. The time Carl fought the squirrel, the night he disappeared drunk, only to reappear an hour later with a small mountain of cheeseburgers, a feast for drunks to devour. Someone please tell that story about Jake in the pizza shop. It's the only story that made me laugh the week of Carl's wake, the last time we were all together, after all that time together. It's our stories that sustain us. And I never believe any motherfucker who can't tell a story. Mike remembers the Christmas Eve that he and Carl closed the shop. This old lady stumbles out of Pollux drunk, laughs singing Christmas carols, and then she falls on her ass and lays there, still laughing, still singing. Carl stepped around her, said back to Mike, "The holidays bring out the best in everyone."
So is the Post-Gazette going to print the word motherfucker?
I added the word motherfucker.
Okay.
You know that I sneak that. Anybody who hasn't seen me read, it was decided when I read in Toledo last month that my new bio should say Jason Baldinger doesn't believe in God and he says fuck a lot.
That's a solid bio. That's a good one.
Pretty much covers it.
One line. Yeah, that's a little longer. I feel like they should be so.
It's a pretty good bio.
That's a pretty good bio.
I might use
yeah.
it more frequently.
Yeah. But no, that poem, yeah. And you think there's also, you know, insider baseball on that, you know, is that there's the grief experience too, you know, which is also another thing that hits people this time of year in a really uncanny and terrible way, you know.
Well, you also have the fact that your coworkers, and maybe this might have been something that started the labor poems in general, tend to become, in some respects, your family, by and large. You spend more time with a lot of those folks than you do your own family, especially once you hit adulthood. So you tend to surrogate family, maybe more so than you properly family. Commonality. Mm-hmm. And ease of dealing and et cetera, and not having maybe all the emotional baggage that comes with family are certainly reasons for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's also, you know, when you work with people, you have a purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Family, at this point, the purpose, like, if you're a functioning adult, functioning adult and your parents are in the pre-adult diaper stage, there is no reason for you to be around those people ever again. Right? I mean, isn't that
unless
the truth?
You really like them.
Unless you really like them. But, you know, for most normal human beings, the truth is it's just a checkoff play.
Yeah.
You know, all these people are in one room for no damn good reason.
I never really thought about Christmas as a checkoff play. Like, it really entertains me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and if there is a rifle over the mantelpiece, it better be fired in the third act. You know, I mean, that's just how that goes. And of course, you know, the rifle is a metaphor for Donald Trump. And, you know, and the thought of Donald Trump, you didn't say it. But, you know, that's another thing of people's, I think, pre-holiday angst. I know it's at least some of mine.
Yes, that's fair.
That the rifle above the mantle will be fired. The orange rifle above the mantle will be fired.
Or, you know, the hatchet of sibling rivalry will be attempted to be buried.
Yes.
Probably in someone's back or skull. Yes.
Yes.
Or, you know, other.
Yeah.
The disintegrations of relationships.
See, I don't have any siblings. That's why I'm so bossy. I'm really proud. Because I don't have to worry about that part, at least. Sibling rivalry.
That's not so bad. I mean, my brother and I don't have a sibling rivalry. We just lead very different lives, you know?
Yeah.
We did completely the opposite thing of each other, so. Which is what brothers probably should do, and that way there's no need to have a rivalry.
Yeah. But when you're working with somebody, you have a goal. You have to get those TPS reports out, you have to get those stock shelves.
Or you're trying just to get to the end of the day so you can go have a fucking drink.
Yeah, exactly.
And wash away the pain.
It's commonality and struggle as opposed to, you know, what's Christmas? Ham and regret? That's all you
and
get.
And cookies.
And cookies.
The cookies are the best part.
Cookies are, sometimes all you get.
It's not that I don't love ham, because I do really love ham.
Yeah, I don't eat ham, but
That's fair, I understand.
Can I choose both? Do I have to pick one? I think I would choose cookies, I guess, more than ham.
All right,
I like ham, too, but,
I love ham. Cookies?
My mom makes, like, 15 different kinds of cookies every year, so that's a lot of cookies to eat.
Yeah.
And you don't have a choice about the regret.
No, you really don't.
Yeah. I'll have the regret instead of cookies.
Can I have the smoked regret with cookies? Are you up, Steph? Do you want to?
Yeah,
do you want me to read?
Yeah.
We're almost 40 minutes in now, right?
Yeah.
You know, okay. You got like two or three poems. So.
For those of you listening at home, you didn't hear the pre-recording conversation wherein I mostly didn't bring work reading holiday stuff from previous years, including the I steal my Christmas presents from 2002 or whatever. but mostly because a lot of them were memoir and they were really long and you never would want to hear those. So I brought three snow related poems, one of which is also holiday related vaguely. And I have read it at one of the previous Bah Humbugs, so we'll read that one for sure.
Okay.
Because it has the lovely title of Christmas 2005. I went through a phase where I realized I had a lot of poems that were like something in a year, because I actually brought two of those with me. Weird. So anyways, Christmas 2005. I wasn't allowed to go home until January, a mandated, belated holiday season. My boss, a stereotype mafioso, kept his job as manager only because he grew up in Brooklyn with the Riggios, the real brothers behind the Barnes & Noble name. This is probably a bad idea, right?
Oh, yeah.
He never worked an 8-hour shift, would show up in a town car, take 2-hour lunches. We received calls from disembodied voices who ordered us to deliver a message to Vinny. If we did so correctly, an entire cheesecake would arrive as payment. I ate so much cheesecake, I could technically add low-level secretary to the mob to my resume. Luckily, they don't know where I live yet. That year, I was pregnant. By the somewhere on the spectrum, Asperger's inclined kid we called Zero because we already had one employee named Matt. What started as a way to get laid grew serious. I knew I couldn't keep it, didn't consider it, but I had to wait until January for an appointment. I took to eating individually wrapped saltine packets at the end of the counter, crumbs falling, sticking snow on my apron. I convinced the custodian to let me keep his keys to the bathroom on our floor. For most of December, I factored in a rest stop to my commute, and when the subway smells, urine perfume, unwashed sweat, rat steamy trash was just too much, I would get off the train before Union Square, drive heave into a trash can, escape above ground for a few breaths of air, descend again, wait for the next train. Until a transit strike, the third ever in New York City history, stopped the trains. But retail doesn't stop, especially 5 days before Christmas. Department managers, assistant managers, myself included, received the message. An entire breakdown of public transportation does not constitute an excuse to miss work. Even if it meant walking from Queens. For days, we shared cabs, walked across bridges, the unwanted pregnancy percolated inside of me. We would arrive for a morning shift, and with no one to relieve us, we'd work until close. I ate a lot of saltines. We waited. I waited. Everything paused until resolution.
Love that poem.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's sad.
Yeah.
And it's vaguely about the holidays.
I started pulling sad poems too, so you know, there's a cachet. We can let it get dark now. You know?
Yeah, we made it the 40-minute mark. Let's get dark.
Well, when the mob comes to get me, because I just talked about it on the podcast.
Is this the moment where the Brillo box gets blown up?
I don't know.
While we're on stage.
Mm.
That would be a very final wave of Christmasing.
It's true. We would only have one more year of doing this if the mob shut us down because I read holiday poem on air.
Well,
to be fair, no details were released about the specifics, which, very smartly, I didn't really know any details. So, I mean, you would deliver a message and then you would get a cheesecake. That part's true. That really happened a lot.
Wow.
So, yes.
Did you get free toppings too, or was it just a plain cheesecake and then you used whatever was in the store?
They were sometimes fancy and sometimes plain. I mean, like, literally whole cheesecakes would show up, and so then, like, 3 days later, another whole cheesecake would show up, and you would be like, we didn't even finish eating the first cheesecake. And I worked with, so I had two roommates that also worked with me, and, they're now married, which is a lovely story, and besides the point. But, like, we would take home, you'd take home half a cheesecake, like, you'd eat some there, and then you'd take home half a cheesecake, and then 3 days later, one of us would have done the message thing, and then we'd have, like, another cheesecake. It was a little ridiculous. But, you know, whatever, as long as the mob is running smoothly in New York, if that's, you know, hoping that's still the case in my absence, now that I no longer live there.
Hopefully there are still cheesecakes being delivered to a Barnes & Noble somewhere
in New York City.
Yep. Although they shut down a lot of Barnes & Noble, so maybe that's not... Yeah, I don't know.
That was the one you also helped Springsteen use the restroom?
That was also the one... Well, yes, so I tell the story as my claim to fame is I helped Bruce Springsteen use the bathroom. Really, I helped him find the bathroom, but, you know, it's like...
Understood, yeah.
And so, he had to go, and he came up to the counter, and everyone was like, oh my god, I can't talk because it's Bruce Springsteen. And dude was like, where's the bathroom? That's what I told him. And everybody else was just like, and I'm like, dude has to go to the bathroom. Like, you kind of have to answer his question. And then I was like, but would you like me to get the custodian to unlock the one on our floor so that you can pee, like, you know, without other people, you know? But it was New York, and celebrities are everywhere, and he's Bruce Springsteen. So he was like, no, I'll go to the one downstairs, like, that you sent me to. And, like, everyone's, like, kicking me behind the... I'm like, I know that it's Bruce Springsteen, but, like, still, like I said, man has to go to the bathroom, gotta tell him where it is, so...
Tramps like
that
us.
That is my most famous celebrity claim to fame. I also used to make hot chocolate for Nikki Hilton, but I would say that's probably not on par with helping Bruce Springsteen go to the bathroom.
No, certainly not.
So,
no.
Yeah.
Sorry to say. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way.
And I also made out with the girl who made out with Jimbo from the Reverend Horton Heat. So that's like 6 degrees of separation, but not really. That's it. That's all I got.
Psychobilly freak out, yeah?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Cool, cool. Very good.
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Yeah, I grew up there. I haven't been.
Oh, I was going to talk some shit on New Jersey.
No, go ahead. I have actually not been on the ground in New Jersey since, like, 2004.
Oh.
In fact, the last time I drove to Brooklyn, I got gas in Easton. So I did not have to stop. I paid more money to pump my own gas because I did not want the soles of my feet. I figured the tires in the car were enough to touch contact with New Jersey. So I zipped through and, you know.
I've been in Jersey 3 times in the last 3 months.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, how about that?
I missed the one pizza shop.
That's all you missed about Jersey?
Yeah, that's it. All the people, you know, there's Facebook. They all moved. All my friends that have since moved into the city.
That's fair.
You know, except for one. Actually, I will say one. One, hi Jay, you might be listening. He is still in the town I grew up in. But everybody else got the fuck out, or at least people that I want to know about in their lives still got the fuck out.
So if Jay wanted to give you a Christmas present, he should send you pizzas from New Jersey.
Rodolfo's, yes.
Yeah.
Though I did look them up online, the pizza looks different now. I think they might have changed their style, so it might not have even been the same thing. So you can never go home again. And besides, my parents sold the house I grew up in, so.
Yeah.
There's no home to go to.
No, that's fair. I know people have a hard time with that feeling, but no, most of the houses that I lived in have been sold, so I don't even think about it at this point in time.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't. Well, that wasn't a happy house either, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. The Robert Hayden house of, you know, the chronic angers. You know what I mean? I mean, it was. I remember reading that poem the first time and the chronic angers of that house. I was like, oh, yeah, I can totally relate. That was, yeah, so some nice family from Columbia bought it and then got foreclosed on. Some other people live there now, so.
Merry Christmas to them.
Merry Christmas to them.
I hope they're doing better.
I hope so, too.
Well, what should we do now? We have, like, 10 minutes left? Should we, like, read another
poem? You want to read another poem before the bottom five and we pitch the thing again?
Yeah, we can do that.
Do we each want to read one, or
Yeah, why don't you start, Matt?
Oh, crap.
You really hate it whenever I do that, so...
Yeah, you hate it whenever I do that, so...
I mean, was there anything that we missed in talking about Christmas or the
Christmas?
The
no,
we
aren't...
Christmas music. That's what we didn't talk about.
Oh.
Really great.
See, but then that would be a plug. That would be a shameless plug for my own project, so...
Oh, well, I mean, I guess I could have mentioned that the poem that I did read...
Nope, don't do it.
Oh, okay.
Nope. Integrity in broadcasting, I tell you what.
Edward R. Morrow over here.
Alright, so yeah, alright, I'll read. This is another one. This is not the most this is not the one that's going to make people the most uncomfortable.
Okay,
I'll preface it by that.
I like
but
it.
It's not the one?
It's not the one. There's another one. Who knows, I might get into a fist
so
fight.
If you come to the Brillo Box on Sunday night at
and
8 o'clock.
The mafioso does not come as well.
Yes.
Set us down.
Matt may read you a poem that may make you very uncomfortable.
This one and another one. And I was actually saying to somebody, I was joking, I was telling you about what the content was, and I was like, yeah, I haven't been in a fist fight for like 20 years, but it could happen. So, and I will say in that poem too, I will have to actually give a trigger warning, I think would be only fair to people.
Oh, okay.
Because there's some things, because I've seen some things in my life, and this is one of the things I've seen.
Tell us about it, Steph.
All right. I should have known better than ask them, those who can afford to be lazy at a private college, who signed up for a 15-week night class, to still bicker every Monday night. Oh, why don't you ever let us go early? To contemplate the absurd notion of a knapsack of white privilege by making them read that seminal essay by Peggy McIntosh. Imagine my surprise as a room full of prima ballerinas, of precious, sensitive artistes, turned into that drunk uncle you hope skips Thanksgiving next year. I thought I had heard the worst when one of those ballerinas raised her hand and said, "The real problem with this essay is that it only makes things worse. Pointing out inequality just leads to reverse racism." No. The belle of the ball was the young lady from Massachusetts, who in her reading journal said, quote, "This reading is irrelevant because we don't have the racial divisions like we had in 1985 when this was written." Only to spew out 5 college-ruled lines later. "Because of slavery, coloreds don't think they have to work."
Did you fail them? Could you fail them?
She didn't get credit for that entry. I never saw her on campus again. But yeah, that was a rough. That class still haunts me. That was.
Yeah, my God, man.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You want to go?
I don't know if I can follow that.
Okay,
that was a little like.
Sorry.
Said, if that's not the trigger warning one, it's gonna get so much worse than that.
Oh yeah, no, it's it's bad, and. Yeah, like I said, somebody might want to fight me. It is Sunday. It is Steelers Sunday. They might be drunk and angry after.
Yeah, that's true. If they even come out.
Yeah. They might stumble upstairs because they hear there's alcohol up there or something. Ah, food bank charity. Go
yes.
Steelers. Ah, and they might just like fall up the stairs.
Actually, knows it's coming, so that would be exactly what happens.
So, anti-capitalist poem or unemployed at the holidays poem?
Doesn't matter.
Help.
Unemployed at holidays poem.
Okay. Pine Sun Pen. Watching the snow from the second floor window, a bar, a reading, Christmas presents in the window, strings of light above the frame. Today was confirmed. I knew it was coming. Laid off in a few weeks, this is the second, maybe the third year in a row that I'm rolling the same scenario. Think over unemployment's past. It seems to come with the winter, and it seems now to come more frequently. 2000 was high on the hog, working 20 hours. Fun employment, if you will. I was making more money than I'd ever made, I guess. Those were the good old days now. 05 was a fucking mess. No part-time jobs, benefits had been cut. You did your best to stretch and pay the rent while living out of bars. 12 was running full speed, a season on the road, milking a severance package, figuring it all come together. It never did. 14, it was grilled cheese twice a day, an Indian buffet for a treat, a box of wine a week, and an unfinished novel, four people living in a one-bedroom apartment. And last year, it was living off of a princely sum of selling off a nice jazz collection. Last year, it was losing my mind and my moorings. There was no way to sit still. Today, John Glenn died. And rather than wonder what's next, I think about past Americas. The one Trump wants to resurrect, sorry, Stephanie. The one you can't resurrect. There seems to have been a future once. We looked at stars and other worlds. Even the working class had optimism, each generation building off the last. Those dreams seem so far away now. Consider my mother, still working two jobs at 62. She raised me on Social Security after my dad died. She put herself through school at the same time. That was an option. It won't be for much longer. She deserves better. We all do. Still, I wonder what happened to those dreams. If anyone still dreams them. An Edward Bellamy world. A Eugene Debs world. A New Deal world. A new frontier. Instead, we get nightmares. Instead, we get the dawn of 1984. That was that easier to follow? I hope.
See, we've gone from personal tragedy to sort of more global, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you know.
I feel like we should also explain that the whole politics thing is because I have a personal motto instilled in me at a very young age from my grandfather, which is that you don't talk about, like, that politics is very personal and you don't talk about it in, like, in company, right?
Right.
So, this is not only the company of both of you, but all of the thousands of people who are listening to
the
this
throngs.
Podcast.
The
thousands,
yes.
Indeed. It right. is thousands.
And so, it's not that I am pro-Trump by any means. I just, especially when there's a microphone in front of me, I'm like, well, that's talking about politics. Like, you can't, I don't know. It's just
we're not allowed to do
thing.
This.
No. It's, I personally don't like to do it. That's it's not fair. That you can do whatever you want.
I know.
So... It's my
but
own personal...
you also know that Matt and I may go off on rants at any given moment, and yeah.
So, for my last poem, I only brought, because like I said, a lot of the other work I've read in previous years is long. I do have some new things that I'm working on that I am not going to reveal for this podcast. I have taken a job, a seasonal-ish job, packing shipments for a Polish deli, meaning that I am sending pierogies and blood sausage... to Polish men all over the country.
Perhaps my mom, if it's the right one, will chat later after the mic is off.
Okay, well, see, I'm obviously doing a very important service. I have a... not going to read any of those. So instead I brought poems that related to winter and snow, because apparently there were no rules and I'm allowed to break them. So this last poem...
I mean, you're an only child. You were allowed to break the rules anyway.
Yes.
There were no rules.
Oh, no. My mom had a lot of rules, and I still broke all of them. Yes. So.
Well, the more rules, the easier to break.
So, yeah, they're... anyways, point being that this totally doesn't really relate to working at all. But it does have to do with family, so we're just... and also it has a number in the title. So, Romantic Ski Vacation 2009. The bed and breakfast owners are getting a divorce. Angry whispers float into the room as the kitchen door swings open, swings closed. We are the only guests. Plenty of space for our hosts to sleep in separate rooms with romantic names. The wildflower, the moonlit suite. Our antique bed creaks, making sex feel guilty. To not disturb them, we have taken to whispering. She talks and talks into her cell phone, analyzes his words, drafts lists of unacceptable behaviors, validates the feelings that fall like snowflakes into endless drifts until the piles are too deep to walk through. We interrupted something big, and the house envelops us, swoops us into its chest, a big unwanted hug which we are unable to break free of. Tension seeps into each room like a stain, and I have never seen the rigid body of divorce so up close. Tense muscles, tightened jaw, hardened heart. In the parking lot, their cars drive off every few hours, and by the morning of checkout, only one remains. I look back as we pull away, my fingers crossed to slough off the jinx.
I think we got sufficiently dark.
That worked.
In the home stretch of the program. I mean, I think we sent the holidays in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Fucking packing.
Yeah. And on that happy note.
Bah humbug!
Bah humbug. Again, Bah Humbug Sunday, December 17th at 8 p.m. at the Brillo Box.
Second floor. We should have a bartender this year.
There should be a bartender. $5, Pittsburgh Community Food Bank.
Or more.
$5 minimum suggested donation.
Lineup.
Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Great lineup. Hit us with the lineup again.
Becky Corrigan, Angel Ellis, Rich Gedgick, Lori Jaquila, Andrea Lorion, Disha Filia, Megan Tutelo, Matt Yusia, Bob Wilicki, Stephanie Brea, and myself, Jason Baldinger.
And I should also mention this is the year 2017.
It is.
Since the internet's forever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I never take these down.
Forever, yes.
The internet is forever until today.
Yes.
Oh, that's exactly true.
Oh, that's right. You might not ever be able to hear this. So anyway, so on that happy note, and there'll be, of course, the link to the Facebook event page on the, website.
Yes.
But now it's time for the bottom five.
Okay.
Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready?
Yes.
Make me nervous.
Yes. And so actually, there's going to be since there's two guests, we're going to do, normally I have multiple guests. It's going to be, it's like you have to
decide.
We have to consensus.
So I have three questions like that, three consensus questions, and two we'll start off with top Trump questions, where I will ask you a question, a personal question, and we'll see who has the worst story, I guess.
Okay,
you ready?
I've answered these with poems in the past, so this may happen again.
This could happen again. Question one. What is the strangest injury? Notice I'm not saying the worst. What is the strangest injury you have ever suffered? The weirdest way you've gotten hurt. The most bizarre, what kind of universe where God exists could this happen? Injury.
I got run over by my own car.
That's right. You did get run over by your own car. Can you top that, Stephanie?
Maybe. I have a sort of damaged vagina and pelvic area that happened when I was climbing the monkey bars when I was very young at daycare, like pre-kindergarten.
Ooh.
And slipped, bar went between my legs, all kinds of, broken, weird bits. There's still, things didn't fuse correctly, so if you feel around in there, not that you are, either of you, but if you do, you can still feel where it kind of, it was whatever broken thing happened kind of fused together a little off, but
No, that's definitely worse.
Worse.
Mine's hilarious.
I have a broken vagina. So,
I have a broken vagina. See, I don't even have those parts on that thing. Yes. It was like
it was terrible. I was young. It was horrible.
It was like a universal crotch cringe.
Yes.
Which I'm sure some of you are listening
to. No. All of us understand the universal crotch cringe.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And so you're sort of about getting run over your own car, which is good. I've heard, but it's also good.
Oh, do you want me to say
this? Yeah,
oh, yeah.
If I had
don't
to
leave
tell
these
people
hanging. Yeah, they're going to be like...
All right, that's fine. So when my mother was still married to my stepfather, we lived outside of Evans City on a huge hill. Our driveway was a 400-foot grade, dirt grade. And it was almost utterly impossible in the wintertime to get up the driveway. Basically, you had to, you couldn't come from one angle. You had to come from the other angle of the road. So you had to go down, turn around, and drive as fast as you could up the roadway, which in the winter can be very tricky.
Yes.
Hit the driveway on the turn and keep flooring it. You could not stop. And if you stopped, you were done. Like, you either parked the car where it was or you had to get back down the driveway.
And start again.
So I, of course, did not hit the driveway appropriately in shortly after an ice storm and, got stuck on the side of the bank of the driveway, which I should also mention ran, the driveway was over a creek bed. Mm. So being 18,
in a
Dodge Omni, an 85 Dodge Omni.
That's important.
I think you had a Dodge Omni, did you not?
No.
I can't. So, being 18 and not thinking sensibly, or being invincible, Rather than walk up to the house and get someone to help me off of the ice patch that I was on, I just figured if I popped the car into neutral and gave it a push, it would work. And so I popped the car into neutral, and I got out, and being on an ice patch, I gave the car a shove, and the car came straight back at me and knocked me down. I rolled ass over tin cups and ended up laying in 6 inches of water in a creek, and then the car rolled back over as, you know, it came down the hill and rolled over me. So I woke up in 6 inches of water looking at my muffler.
All right. That is scary.
So there's that story. There's not a poem.
That's not a poem. You know, someday. All right, so
now it's public knowledge. Maybe it has to be.
No, I think it does. Okay, second top Trump question: what's the strangest item you have eaten and/or found in your stool? It could be It could be like, oh my god, when did that get in my body? You know, like I don't remember eating a button or something, but. You know what I mean? Like, I'm leaving the door open to possibilities.
Well, how do you know? A button. Maybe a few spiders, too, but, you know, they don't
reappear. Yeah, how do you know? Unless you check. How do you know? Those spiders probably digest.
I mean, they make a certain consistency. They are protein.
I'll go first.
Go for it.
It's strange, but it's not really that strange. We were just talking about this last night, my partner and I. When I lived in Finland as an exchange student, there was this, like, weird casserole that showed up, like, free for cafeteria lunch all the time. And it was this... I should probably look it up. It was Maxilatico, I believe is what it was called. But it was this liver... It gets worse than liver. So it was this liver casserole, and... because you all are going to want to know exactly what was in it besides liver. But it was like liver and raisins and syrup and rice or something terrible. I don't know. I'm like, it's like not giving me any reception to like look it up for some weird reason. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And like I ate things like blood sausage was like, oh, blood sausage is good. I like blood sausage. Didn't bother me. But this weird liver, I was like, why is there syrup and rice and like raisins in this
liver?
Yeah, it was terrible. So it was... Yeah, rice, ground liver, syrup, eggs, onion goes with all those things, of course, and raisins, and it was terrible. That's all I got.
Beef tongue? I mean, I've had the beef tongue tacos once in a while, and that's probably as weird as I can get.
Okay. Have you had the octopus ones from Taco?
I have never had the octopus ones. I have had alligator, both alligator sausage and alligator something else, I forget. But I've never traveled extensively outside of America, so there's not... Adventurous eating in America usually involves how much, not what.
Like, random meats don't bother... Like, for some reason, this thing I feel is grosser than just eating a random piece of meat.
No, that's... Yeah, put, it's like other weird stuff. There was work done on that.
Yeah, like, they cooked it. Yeah, they made a casserole. It wasn't just, like, eating... Yeah, like, here's your... Try this weird awful... Like,
O-F-F-A-L, consensus.
All right.
Questions.
So that makes me the winner, right?
Yeah, you're
good. All right, so now it's time for consensus now. Question three. Out of all of the possible ways a person can die, what is the way you least want to? What's the least desirable way to bite it? Other than 6 inches in a... creek and 6 inches of water underneath your mouth.
Burning, I think, would certainly rank really highly up there. Burning to death.
So I'm really afraid of like fire, like you know, happening in my house when I'm gone and stuff like that. I would say fire would definitely be up there for me.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, drowning is terrible, but at least you know.
See, I've almost drowned. It's not as bad as you think.
Yeah, I think it would go
kind
quickly.
Of peaceful. Yeah, no. It's there's a peaceful moment. Especially
the
if
water
the sun's
is very
out.
Womb-like and stuff.
Yeah,
too.
And the
yeah,
sun
you know,
coming through. It's not so bad.
I think, fire.
It's pretty, but
fire.
Yeah, you have to
fire.
Smell it while you're going.
Yeah,
you know,
though I will say, I mean, you know, the thing about fire is once you get past the second degree, you know, the nerve endings are burned up, so you don't really feel it. You know. So it's maybe a Zen moment there. Question four.
Thank you, because I had nothing.
Yeah. Question four. What is one pop culture text or personal preference you wish more people did or knew about? Something for pop... You wish more people were like, hey, everybody should be into blank.
I don't know anything but pop culture. My mind just went blank. I don't even
know. No, I mean, I think mine did too at that point in time.
Still thinking about burning to death, basically.
Probably, kind of. Like, that's definitely going to... I'll dream about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're you know... J.B. roasting on an open fire.
There is the music I was looking forward to incorporating into this episode of this podcast.
Yeah, you know... I'm stalling by singing a song.
It's not a writer, not a band, not a film, not a book that...
That I wish more people knew about?
Yeah. That everybody should have read or seen or experienced or tasted.
Oh, I can't remember his name now. Who was the guy that wrote for Rolling Stone and had, was the book of essays called, was it Pulphead? No. Anyways, he wrote
Rivethead. Ben Hamper?
No, that's a great book.
That is a great book.
But he wrote this people should really know about great, that book. He wrote this really great essay about Guns N' Roses where, like, the first paragraph alone is just, like, beautifully written. Everyone should read that. Everyone should read that. I should probably look that up, too. This I'm terrible at this. These last five questions give me a lot of stress.
Sorry. That's where the fun happens.
We have to come to an agreement, though, so you've never read that, so how would we
agree? Matt and I seem to agree on Ben Hamper, though.
Yeah, Rivethead's a good book.
Have you ever read that Rivethead book?
No.
You should read that book.
I'll have to find you a copy of it, because... Anyway, even if this is not the consensus, I will explain it, because I think everybody should read the book.
Yes.
It certainly fits in our conversation about labor, not necessarily with Christmas... Hamper works.
There are Christmas stories in the book, though.
There are.
The subtitle of the book is Tales from the Assembly Line, listeners, so you ben understand Hamper. What this is.
Yes.
Yeah, where we're going with this. Okay. Rivethead,
Tales from the Assembly Line.
Yes, he built Chevy Suburbans and Blazers from, like, 78 to the mid-80s.
I think I would love this book,
So he was unemployed for most of that time, mm-hmm. because obviously the audio industry was dying. He's in Flint, Michigan, and... the book kind of begins with the excesses, the egregious excesses that made a lot of people tut-tut about unions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, he's working an overnight shift and he's stationed with one other guy and they're taking turns and punching each other out while one guy goes and drinks all night.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually you get to the stress of working or not knowing about your work. Mm-hmm. Leading him to a nervous breakdown, and the essay about his nervous breakdown is fabulous. If you've ever had a nervous breakdown, it walks you through exactly what you know, like it explains it better than I've ever been able to necessarily, having done it myself.
But I mean, the weirdness, the boredom, the corporate excess,
yes. The union all excess, the, all the excesses. Excess,
all of the excesses of...
Of the 80s, in
of
particular.
The 80s, and how... Yeah. I mean, I remember one of the taglines in the back cover of the book was, this couldn't have been what Henry Ford had imagined.
No.
The assembly line, yeah.
No. But also, Hamper went on to become a DJ, and does serious FM soul shows that are fantastic, from what I understand, as well.
He was also in Roger and Me.
That's right, he wasn't
friends with Michael Moore, yeah. He actually tells part of his nervous breakdown story
in Roger and Me,
yeah.
Local connection, Tony Buba was offered the editing job on that and turned it down to make Lightning Over Brack.
Oh, wow.
Side note,
wow.
There you go.
Damn.
It gets us no closer to a consensus, but...
No, because I haven't read it, but it really makes me want to.
I'll find you a copy. Scott and I will work on it, you know. Scott finds books everywhere.
So. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Next question. We're not going to have a consensus.
Okay.
Because next you question. Haven't read what I wanted, and I haven't read what you wanted.
Was there something that
No, that I feel like that's...
Can we just maybe make it just Appetite for Destruction, then?
What? pretty sure everybody knows that. He said you wish more people would. Oh. You wish more people would.
That's right,
know about it. Pretty sure everyone knows about appetite.
Maybe it should be like a Motley Crue biography.
Anyways, it's a really beautiful essay.
Really beautiful essay about Guns N' Roses.
Jeremiah Sullivan. The book is called Pulphead, which is close to Rivethead. Can we just call that a consensus?
Head books. Books that end in the word head.
Yes, yes.
There you go. More people need books in the word head. That was tough, but we worked it out.
We put it together.
While we're at it, can we get Edith Head's gowns in here, too?
I used to have a dog named Edith Head. Ashes are up on the mantle upstairs. But.
So. See, and now this is sad again.
Sorry.
We get
she used to poop on this rug, actually, when she was senile. Anyway, question 5. If you could remake humanity, say through genetic engineering or magic or whatever, is there anything you would fix or modify about the human animal? Is there a more intelligent design out there for the human?
Physical or...
Could be physical, could be mental.
Greater empathy and the concept of love.
That's why I was asking if it was physical or if it was like a
It could be either. It could be that. I mean, you want to go full like Octavia Butler Parable of the Sower thing, where like you hurt somebody and like you feel it.
The Star Wars, you know, if you cut off my hand, you know, you get the electronic hand.
Yeah.
Bring it in it there. I mean, I think empathy and a greater capacity for love would be really appreciated.
Maybe we should end with that, because that's like a positive up note. Like if
That's what the holidays are supposed to be about.
Yes, the holidays. It's empathy and a greater capacity for love, and that we will... Yes, let's end with that.
The Charlie Chaplin speech from The Great Dictator.
There you go.
Maybe have you seen that movie? Can that be the consensus? Because that for the last question?
We've done it.
It's gone. It's over.
I mean, it makes me think about
that.
The
movement's gone. I mean, I could edit this. I could edit out my fuck up in the beginning. We could get to the answer.
Empathy and a greater capacity for love.
Yes.
There you go.
That's what we are going with.
And I think that's about it. Again, Sunday, December 17th, 2017, 8 p.m., Brillo Box, second floor. $5 minimum, suggested donation, Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Poets and writers working in the holidays. Bah humbug. Our next episode will eventually happen, and I don't know, it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at gonnadiepodcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thank you again, Stephanie and Jason. Later, meets.
Thanks, Matt.